Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
All right, welcome in, everybody. John and Lance, Aaron on the board, and off we go here. If you want to get in, at John Granato, at Lance Zierlein, at Aaron is Blitzed. You can give us a call at 713-780-3776. Yet another disappointing performance in Kansas City.
Okay.
Brady Singer just shutting you down. And then Paw making a lot of moves that you just shake your head. So let's start with pulling Greinke. 85 pitches. Now, how weird is this? 85 pitches. He gave up 5 hits, no walks, no strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he was getting a lot of contact. Just early contact that was beneficial to him in the first couple innings because he was zipping through. The first inning was the 7-pitch inning. So he was, you know, there was not a lot of hard hit balls against him, which is good. That's what you want. You want to keep the home runs out of it. But he was solid.
He was solid.
He was solid. I think maybe the Astros were a little concerned that a light inning lineup wasn't getting strikeouts there. But his strikeout total, other than the last game where I think he was up around 7 in the last one, it's been way lower. He's had a hard time getting over 4 strikeouts now. And he was at 85 pitches. You figured, 15 pitches in an inning, he could have got to 100 pitches, no problem. And I don't know if the Astros, you know, I don't know right now. There was talk, Jeff Blum and Todd Callis talked about this yesterday. There was a lot of teeth gnashing going into the season around Major League Baseball about these starters coming off of the weird COVID season that we had last year that extended the season. How many pitchers would be going over 200 innings? And one of the guys they talked about was Zach Greinke is on pace to go over 200 innings because he's just typically not going to miss time due to injury. I mean, he's going to go out there every fifth day and he's going to pitch.
Well, who's the only guy that could stop Michael Jordan in college?
Dean Smith.
And who's the only guy that can keep Zach Greinke from getting 200 innings?
I guess Pawpaw.
Pawpaw.
Or James Click.
No, this is Papa, because he's not calling. James Click isn't calling down and saying put Blake Taylor in right now for.
No, now that selection is Dusty's, but he could say.
Well, why even pull him though?
Personally, he doesn't throw like I don't. He's one of those guys that could probably throw. You could probably give him 110,
but see,
120 pitch count. It wouldn't be an issue.
We heard Zach before going, well, that's how it's been since I got here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lack of respect. This guy is on his way. He's a Hall of Famer. Is Zach Greinke a first ballot or at least a Hall of Famer? I think so. He doesn't have the big number. He's not going to get the wins, but I think that's certainly changed this era of pitchers to the Hall of Fame, I think is going to be a little bit different than previous times. Of course, we know Verlander is. Scherzer is well on his way, it looks like. But it's going to be, you know, the numbers of 300 wins is changing. That is totally changing.
That's
now.
A wrap.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ain't right. getting there anymore.
You ain't getting there with a five-man rotation. But Zach Greinke is as close to a Hall of Famer as we've seen over in Major League Baseball over the, you know, this era. Zach Greinke is a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he does not get the same kind of if that was Verlander, 85 pitches.
Yeah, but they're different pitchers. Well, one guy's a punch
out. But it doesn't matter pitcher. What kind of pitchers they are. You got 85 pitches, you've given up one run, and I'm on my way to a Hall of Fame career, and you're going to pull me after 6?
I wasn't sure if they were going to go back to him. Honestly, I wasn't sure if 85 is a number where you're like, okay, they could go another inning. I wasn't sure if they were going to go back to Zach or not, but when they came out, Blake Taylor, and I realize this is hindsight now, the first two guys get on base and you know.
Well, they didn't get on base. They homered.
Well, okay, the first guy got on base and then a homer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those were the first two at-bats, the first two batters he faced.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, sweet start. And I'm just immediately getting mad at Dusty. And then, you know, my thought, because I want to have a reason to be upset about somebody made a mistake that could have just all... In my head, I immediately went to, why not, if you know you need this one, and you do need that one, why not go to Kendall Graveman right off the bat and try to sew up the seventh inning and get to the eighth inning and figure out what you're going to do in the eighth? That's how I looked at it.
This guy is arguably your ace.
You're talking about Zach?
Zach Greinke. Arguably your ace. I mean, he's got a 1.89 this month. He's got 10 strikeouts and one walk this month. This guy is your guy. This is the man that is going to. He's a hall. He's on the way to Hall. And you treat him, dude. I've managed Little League. You get an 85 pitch count. You have a 6-inning game, and at 85 pitches, you have to pull your pitcher. They treated him like a Little League pitcher yesterday. Dusty treated him like a Little League pitcher because he had his 85. You got to sit down now because you got your 85 pitches and you can't pitch for another 4 days.
You want to hear from Dusty?
Yeah, let's hear why Dusty did this.
Okay. Dusty?
Yeah, I understand that. But, I mean, Taylor was rested too. And Benintendi had some success against Graveman. And Benintendi doesn't hit left-handers nearly as well as right-handers, not even close. And so the situation where, Taylor was already loose, for that job. And, everybody has a job to do. I mean, when else was I supposed to use him, you know? And we were going to use Taylor in the seventh. And then we got down to the other Taylor. We were going to bring in Graveman, to pitch the eighth, and then hopefully bring in Presley to pitch the ninth. That's why we didn't bring him in. I mean, he made a mistake. I mean, he had one ball and two strikes, and he hung it. And then he hung the pitch to Dozier as well. That resulted in the 2-run homer.
Okay, that doesn't answer the question, though.
But he's talking about... hear it, though?
No, he said...
He already had a plan. No, he said, we're going to go to Blake Taylor there. We're going to go with it. Like, he even said, we had a plan. Papa, they had a roadmap already planned out. Okay, we're going to go
that's
here.
That's exactly what happened with A.J. Hinch. And you know what happened? Yeah. Lose the World Series.
But that's what I'm saying. That is my guess is that is pretty much a major league staple. Is that you're not just like, what do I do here? Well,
but he didn't answer the question. He said Graveman, Benintendi has had some success against Graveman. He said, okay, so we're going to go with Taylor here. He was already warmed up. We might as well use him. When did you want me to use him? When do you guys want me to use him? How about I don't want you to use him? How about you could bypass Blake Taylor in the seventh inning because your pitcher's only thrown 85 pitches and given up one run? You can bypass Blake Taylor, and once you get past Benintendi, then you can warm up Graveman, and Graveman can come in. What? No, he didn't answer the question of why he pulled Greinke. He answered the question of why he used Blake Taylor instead of Graveman.
I was trying to see if we had, because you're, yeah. Let's play the play at the plate because you're kind of burying the lead.
No, I'm not burying the lead. That was the game. They lost the game right there.
Well, they lost the game officially with an unbelievable play at the plate, which is really right now. Right now, this is the perfect epitome of what's going on with the Astros right now.
Base hit left field. McCormick coming around. The throw to the plate.
Now, here's the situation. Ballsy situation for the Astros. Two out rally. They get Uncle Mike. No. Who was it? Who had the first hit? Was it? Yeah, it was Michael Brantley. No. Well, maybe I'm going to any before.
No.
I'm going to any before.
McCormick started it. Myers had the second hit. It was the two rookies that were on.
Yeah, was it a two-out rally?
And then Castro.
I think I'm going back an inning before when they had a rally that
Yeah, died. Castro came up and pinch hit and hit the base hit that got the two guys home.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So you had a chance here with you had minute well, you had a man up first and second, and then you had a base knock by Altuve. You have Jose Altuve up, who you couldn't ask for anything more than Altuve. Other than
why
usually,
did he bunt the first pitch?
I don't even want to talk about it.
You know, that's how
must
you
have been a
remember Minnesota. He bunted with two outs and runners on, tried to get a base hit bunting, and he got thrown out at first base to end the game. It was almost an identical situation, and he bunted again. And Blummer goes, I guess he wants to leave it to Brantley.
Yeah, that was very, very strange. So that is almost like a lack of confidence or something, because that's not typically what you see from Altuve. But Altuve still got the base knock. Pretty well hit. You know, base hit to left. And I thought they might hold him up, because you could tell it got to the left field about the same time he was getting to third base. And Benintendi cut it loose. And here's the play if you didn't see it. It is a bang-bang play at the plate. You can tell it's a bang, but you can see it's going to be.
It doesn't get any closer than
it
that.
It doesn't get any closer. And when I watch it in real time, I saw the delayed out call, and I thought he missed it. McCormick got there first. His hand got there first. And you know what? When you watch it, I was right. His hand does get there first. However, and the umpire just lucked out on this one, because the umpire made the right call. But when you watch it in super slow motion, as he's sliding in with his hands, his fingers raise up. Mm-hmm. His fingers raise up, and he doesn't get them down quickly. And by the time he's just starting to get them down, the tag hits his hip. By Perez. I mean, it is a bang, bang play. And if his fingers had been down the whole time in the slide, he's in safe. But the fingers pop up at the last second.
Yeah, and it does not get.
It was a lucky call, because there's no way the umpire could have seen that. But it was just right there.
It doesn't get any closer than that. And yet, another loss against another really bad team. They got an afternoon game today. We've got Texans talk on the other side. We've got Rusty Harden's presser. We got all kinds of news as well. Steph Stradley is going to join us to talk about Rusty Harden and his press conference yesterday. That'll be at the bottom of the hour. And then we are also going to have Robert Flores joining us from MLB Network. That'll be at 8:30 this morning. And then we're going to have another guest as well to talk about a big article on NFL.com. So we have got a busy, busy show for you right now. And the kids are busy wanting your car.
Well, so the Houston Can Academy is partnered with carsforkids.org. And what happens is they've got a second chance. They benefit children or younger people, I should say, who are looking for a second opportunity at a diploma. They're out there trying to help someone who is a little bit down on their luck, and they're trying to get that diploma and make it happen for them. And Cars for Kids, they're saying, yeah, Houston Can Academy, we want to work with you. And here's what we're going to do. We are going to do that by getting cars, whether they're running or not running. We're going to do that by taking your donations. Cars, SUVs, motorcycles, doesn't matter. They want to bring it in from your property, running or not running. So if they need to go out and haul it off, they will do that. You are going to get a $50 gift card from a Visa gift card when you mention you heard about it on ESPN 97.5. And you also get a tax write-off. And by the way, they'll search the title, they'll transfer it. You don't have to do anything. They've never made it easier. Make sure that you do something good for someone else and get a tax write-off in the process right off the car and not the kids by going to carsforkids.org.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. 7:15, 16 now, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Steph Stradley going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour here to talk about this Rusty Harden stuff. So we got...
By the way, Brian Singer. Or no, it's not Brian Singer.
It's Brady.
It's Brady Singer, yeah. He was 18th pick of the first round. You know, he's a guy who has some ability.
Whatever.
He was a quick pitch specialist, as you saw yesterday. Really funky wind up and delivery where he speeds it up. But I posted this on Twitter too. When I looked him in the face, I said, "Where have I seen him?" Oh, that's right. He's the one that was murdered by Daniel Plainview with the bowling pin. And then people said, "No, no, no. He was the brother. He was Eli. No, not Eli. Paul. He was Paul who actually gave Daniel Plainview the drop on the Wells, mm-hmm. and he actually got out of Dodge." That's who he looks like from There Will Be Blood. He looks like Paul Dano pitching. I thought, this is Paul Dano's pitching. We've got to beat Paul Dano. They can't lose to Paul Dano. That guy's an actor. He's not even a pitcher. Yeah, he beat them too.
So you've been waiting on that, haven't you? What did you you were thinking about that most of the game last night, were you?
Last night I tweeted it.
You did?
I tweeted a picture, and I had a lot of people respond. I didn't realize other people saw it too.
I didn't. Okay.
Did you even pay attention to it?
I didn't see your tweet. No.
No. Did you even pay attention to how he?
He looks like the preacher, Eli. No, I didn't really lock in on that. I was locking in on how he was mowing down Astros hitters and nothing was going on except the two rookies, McCormick and Myers. Thank God Jake Myers is on this team. Otherwise, you'd have no hits. Dude is pretty damn good. Dude is clutch. He's stepping up and hitting. This is an opportunity. See, you get these opportunities once in life, and Jake Myers is really taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Myers is saying, there's a spot for me on a major league roster.
I like watching Jake Myers.
I do, too.
Jake Myers is, you know. Chaz McCormick better be careful. He didn't get jumped by Jake Myers.
Hey, who knows? If he keeps hitting like this, you got to get him on the field. Oh, well. Well, it doesn't matter. Bregman's never coming back. Doesn't matter. You're never going to see Alex Bregman died, so that's all. That's over. So you're never going to see that. There's going to be spots for Ledmus Diaz and guys rotating out of the DH and all. You know, no worries. There's don't worry. We got COVID. We got all kinds of stuff for Jake Myers to play. Not worried about that. So yesterday, Rusty Hardins his press conference. So he did say something, and it was interesting. He said, we'll hear Rusty say it, actually. Rusty Harden, here's Rusty talking about the FBI investigation.
Until yesterday, I did not know that they were also, apparently, and I don't have reason to doubt this now, they were apparently also investigating Mr. Busby's allegations. But I'm glad to hear they are. I wasn't aware of it, but we wouldn't be aware of it. They wouldn't tell us that they shouldn't. They're conducting a private investigation. And I'm delighted they are, as I say, because we want everything to come out.
And what he's talking about is, what Rusty's talking about is that one of the women who have accused Deshaun Watson, her name is being Brett Watson. Her name is, she's Shanae Lawson. She's accused Watson of forcing her to perform oral sex on him. She has not filed a criminal complaint. But Harden says there are text messages that can contradict the graphic allegations that Lawson made against Watson. And he read some of those to reporters. She wrote to Deshaun, "Hey, Deshaun, just wanted to say thank you for trusting me with your massage today. I'll be here until January 3rd if you'd like to get another one." And then she told Deshaun that Sessions have never went like that. It feels really horrible. Feels really horrible as a person. She does. Make sure we're on the same page about a game plan going forward.
Wait, Rusty read that one?
Yeah, Rusty.
That doesn't sound like that's good for his client.
Allegedly spoke with Watson. No, spoke with Watson about a non-disclosure. No, here's what she said.
Okay.
Lawson also allegedly spoke with Watson about a non-disclosure agreement and said she wanted to make sure we're on the same page about a game plan going forward. I guess the non-disclosure isn't about the lawsuit. The non-disclosure is that she won't say anything about their massages. That's the non-disclosure. And then Rusty goes on. She's the one that alleges oral sex, which is, by the way, and we'll talk to Steph Stradley about this, because there are certainly degrees of criminality here for Deshaun Watson, but major criminality degrees here from, oh, he showed it and he was going, you know, gyrating and he tried to make me touch it, to he forced me to have oral sex. Huge difference. Huge difference. So we'll talk to Steph about that. And if one of these women who accused him of oral sex had sent him these text messages, well, Rusty says the FBI isn't investigating Deshaun Watson. He's investigating the accusations, the false accusations that this woman is making against Deshaun Watson. So we'll see whether or not, you know, and then Rusty had plenty to say about Tony Busby. So, you know, this is all a lot of posturing and a lot of rhetoric that really means nothing, to tell you the truth. But this is, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. I heard Lamont on with the afternoon guys, the Wheelhouse.
Lamont is a listener.
Right. And he called in and he made a good point. He's like, you know, Rusty might be out of his league here in that he's self-proclaimed, I'm not a social media guy. I'm old school, you know, and now you're in a new world. You're in a new world where Tony Busby is using everything that he has at his disposal, social media, Instagram, Twitter, all the things that Tony Busby is using to get his message out there. And Rusty's appalled by it. Guess what, Rusty? That's the new world that we're living in.
Yeah.
That's how you get word out today about stuff.
I think it's clear that Rusty is Rusty doesn't like the methodology that this is new methodology. This isn't the way it usually goes. This isn't the schematics and the blueprint for what a case like this usually looks like. And maybe some of it Tony Busby's not following through on things that are considered to be standard, you know, which I can understand why a lawyer would be upset about that. Or maybe it's just also a case of, yeah, this is not the way these things usually go. And if that's the case, and if some of it has to do with, you know, methodology of Tony Busby, then you can tell these two guys really don't like each other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really don't like each other.
Yeah. Now, Sarah Barshop was on ESPN yesterday. And let's go with first her takeaway from the Harden press conference. She had this to say on ESPN yesterday about Rusty Harden's presser.
What I took away from the press conference was Harden saying that not much has really changed from these cases in the last 4 months. He said that a lot of the news that's been reported is pretty standard in cases like this, but he said usually it's kept pretty private. Now, he said he doesn't want to try these cases in the media, but he did hold a press conference today where he talked about one of the plaintiffs is allegedly being investigated by the FBI for extortion. Now, I think one important thing to note is the timeline for all of this. Unless these cases are settled, and that's something that Harden says Watson does not want without the terms being publicly disclosed, is that there's not going to be a resolution for a long time. Now, that makes it tricky for the Texans as they discuss what they're going to do for for Watson going into the 2021 season. Because while plaintiffs can be deposed starting in September, Watson's deposition cannot take place until February 2022. And that's a long time from now as the Texans decide what they're going to do going into the season.
And she went on to say, I mean, she's out there every single day. And she went on to say that the Texans are, we've heard so many people and there's so many opinions about this thing. And so many people have waited. Get rid of them. They don't want to trade. Yeah, they do. You wait this thing out. And that's what Sarah Barshop said about the Texans and their strategy.
Much like what Harden said about not a lot changing in the last 4 months in these cases, that's kind of the way the Texans' mindset is as they approach what they're going to do with Watson. They said from the very beginning, in that first press release, in fact, that they're going to lean on the NFL in their investigation. They're not really going to comment further than that. Now, of course, there have been many turns in this case, but they've said publicly and privately that they're going to let the NFL do what they want to do. Now, I've talked to a couple people in the organization who thought that maybe the NFL would make a decision and prevent Watson from coming to training camp back in July. That didn't happen. Now, that doesn't mean that Watson can't be put on the exempt list before the regular season starts, but the Texans are kind of waiting to see what the NFL does as they decide what's going to happen with him, because head coach David Culley really gave an update for the first time on Monday. And he said, although Watson hasn't been on practice, he's not injured. And so it seems that would take away the option of putting him on injured reserve to start the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's going to hit the exempt list. He's going to hit the exempt list.
Has to.
This is almost, the Texans are almost in an untenable situation. they're going to end up, because Watson showed up, they can't get their money. They're not going to recoup their money because, and they certainly can't put him on the roster. So the NFL has got to hook him up unless, you know, he's looking at the Texas, looking at Cal and going, you know what? I might as well. What's the difference, Cal? So you got 52 guys. Just pay them and have in the most uncomfortable situation in the NFL.
I think that the Texans, here it is from a pragmatic standpoint. You're going to move him at some point. I don't think you want anything that could potentially harm your standing from a trade value standpoint and from a leverage mm-hmm. standpoint. And if it gets ugly between the two, you're going to have all the vultures trying to swim in and get them for 70 cents on the dollar. And, you know, for what? If you're the Texans, you absolutely don't want to have to pay him for this because you know he already said, well, I'm not going to play. Well, in the real world, if he didn't play, he wouldn't get his game checks, and you wouldn't have to pay him his game checks. I think there is maybe it feels like there's been a concerted effort because David Culley was asked about this day before yesterday, and is Deshaun there? Is he even in the building? Is he practicing? Yeah, he's there. He's not practicing. You know, nothing's changed. That's his answer. Nothing's changed. But he is in the building. He said he's in the meeting room.
He got his work in.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
He's basically saying he's there. He's not practicing.
He's in meetings.
It feels like there is an agreement.
He's being a great guy.
There's an agreement between the two sides, basically, I guess.
You're not, yeah.
All right, that's fine. You'll be here. We'll get you out of here as soon as we can.
All right.
Just don't screw this up for us.
When we come back, Steph Stradley's going to join us, and she'll break down what she thinks, and we got some more.
Steph Stradley is a lawyer. For those of you who just know her as a blogger at the Chronicle and big Texan super fan for a long time, Steph Stradley's a lawyer.
That's
her day job.
Yeah, right. So
for those who know me as a pit master, a numbers guy, you know, I host a radio show, too, by the way. I'm not just a numbers guy. I'm not just pit master. I'm not just a fix-it like a, you know, a handyman around the house, things like that.
No, you're not just that.
A draft guy. I do radio.
You're not any of that, if you want to. Mm-hmm. Let's not mistake Lance for any of that, actually. What we are going to talk about, though, right now is we're going to talk about going over to Lafayette. Just down the road, about three and a half hours, you'll hit Ambassador Caffrey. You want to go there. You want to get to the Evangeline Thruway, whatever. I mean, it's wonderful. You want to go to downtown Lafayette. You want to go up, and you want to hit Avery Island up there. That's about, I don't know, 40 minutes south of Lafayette. You want to hit the Atchafalaya Basin. You keep on going through Lafayette, but you stay in Lafayette. You have a great weekend in which you are eating and drinking and having fun and listen to Zydeco, and especially over the weekends it is rocking. But it's 7 days a week that you can get your music on, your Zydeco music on in Lafayette. There's always something going on. It's so much fun. You got the Acadiana Culture Center. You got that. You got anything that you want to do in Lafayette. I'm telling you, I love Lafayette. You will too. You're looking for a great time, a nice weekend, an affordable weekend. LafayetteTravel.com. That's LafayetteTravel.com.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You can totally see him.
Welcome back, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, this is no laughing matter. This is serious stuff. Yep. We got Deshaun Watson sitting around all day doing nothing, probably getting fat like James Harden did before he was traded. Then look what happened.
He lost a bunch of weight in one day.
And then all of a sudden he couldn't play in the postseason. But now we got Steph Stradley joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. She writes stuff for the Chronicle. She's out there about every day, or at least about every day out of Texans camp. And she is a lawyer, so she's going to help us break down what Rusty talked about yesterday. Steph, welcome to the show. How are you?
I just want to say that just straight off, you know, I'm sentimental these days.
We didn't hear the beginning of that, Steph. Can you say it again?
I'm just very sentimental these days. I just want to say how much I love you guys.
Oh, thank you, Steph.
We love you too, Steph. We've known each other since 2002.
One?
One.
No, one. One. Yeah. Yeah. One.
Yeah. 20
it's
years.
It's been now. A long time.
20 years now.
Since the Texans started.
Yeah. Yeah. Since the Texans started.
Hey, before we get into the, I want to talk to Steph Stradley, the fan, before we get into, because there's going to be a lot of time to talk, about Deshaun Watson. But you were there at the very beginning. You were part of the tryouts of the group of fans who were kind of the super fans, got to sit in the end zone. You were one of them. Like, you were a winner.
She was
a
winner.
That whole group. But I'm curious, like, as somebody who has been that hardcore fan out at every tailgate, and it was really a lot of fun, even when the Texans weren't as good. Where do you stand? I know how John and I stand on this, but where do you stand? Now, we're 20 years in now, basically, and where do you stand with your feelings about the team / organization now versus maybe when you started?
Boy, you know, everybody has different feelings, so I'm certainly not going to speak for all fans, but for me personally, I'm about as down as I possibly could be, just because I just don't, like, there's aspects of what they're doing right now that I like, but it's kind of overshadowed by everything, and just kind of, you know, basic things that we just know, like just how the GM search was handled was just absolutely disrespectful to the fan base. Just was. Everybody wanted a reset, and there isn't a reset, and there's a lot of just the clouds of 2020 and years before that. And then, you know, just the COVID stuff. I mean, you know, tailgating is fun. Well, maybe it's not fun if you're vaccinated, you get people's grandmas sick. And, you know, like, I can't say that I'm really just enthusiastic about being in a full stadium of people when, you know, the hospitals are full of people.
I don't think you're going to have to worry about full stadiums of people.
Okay. Well, yeah, but I do have to worry about the fact that I had to write a check to keep my PSL. So maybe whatever I do with it down the future, I mean, just like, okay, fine, just eat this.
I didn't. This is the first year I said, no, I'm not doing it. I don't care. But you know what? You can have my PSL. I heard a story yesterday. Guy got called. He was number 17,000. And he was on 17,000 on the wait list. Called him up, said,
"No way,
you want your tickets? You're number one now.
Hey, you want to come get these?"
Yeah, and
I mean, well, I'm glad that you can, you know, if they finally figured this out, you know, my PSLs would probably be worth, you know, five figures. I'm glad that you can just eat that, but yeah, there's sunk cost.
Well, it's 20 cost. Years. I put it into the cost of them. That's what I
can
did.
Can you write it off?
I put it in the cost of my tickets. That's all. Because guess what, Steph? If you're going to try to resell those, good luck with that.
No, exactly.
Right. All right. So let's talk about this, Steph. Let's talk about, first of all, I want to know your thought, because is Rusty Harden got one hand tied behind his back, and the new way law is going to be the Tony Busby way versus the Rusty Harden way, with using social media and winning the public with social media?
Well, you know, the weird part about that, and I just want to talk about this generally, lawyers are not supposed to do pretrial publicity, because you're not supposed to paint the jury panel. Like, that's just a rule. Now, there's exceptions to the rule, and one exception is, like, if you think that there is a, you know, some kind of public menace out there and you're warning people, and, you know, you could maybe do that with your original publicity, but now that there's a judge, now that there's, you know, the cases are going on, you're really not supposed to do any of that. So, like, if you call one of the lawyers and say, "Hey, I heard such and such," you're supposed to say, I can't comment on this, right? Well, it's kind of in a weird posture right now, because I guess, you know, somebody contacted Tony Busby, who's representing the people who have the claims, and asked him about an FBI report, and he commented back. And then kind of sent text to other people, kind of walking that back a little bit. But by that point, you know, the bell's rung, and then Rusty, you know, using one of the exceptions to when you can do pretrial publicity, just said, okay, I have to respond to this. And he did. So, I mean, that's where we're at. But we really shouldn't be hearing from the lawyers in this. And frankly, one of the things that all of your listeners should know is what the lawyers say isn't evidence. They have an obligation to zealously represent their clients. That's what they do. And you're not supposed to, you know, like, so when we listen to what they say, that's what they're wanting us to hear. Now, whether it's 100% true or a shade of the truth, they are zealously representing their clients. And you shouldn't take anything that they say at face value. I mean, it might be right, it might not be right. It might be partially right.
I'm kind of curious if you think it is as simple. It's not obviously as simple as, but is this kind of a case of old school versus new school? New school meaning Busby is more, you know, feels very TV lawyerish, Better Call Saul-ish, you know, where he's going to use different means that Rusty, and we talked about that, but Rusty is like, no, this is procedure. You're stepping outside of procedure. Is it also that simple that these two just come from different places in terms of their view of law or approach to trial?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has different approaches. And, you know, I have a FAQ that I put up on my Twitter feed that's pinned there. But there are any number of approaches that lawyers can take to things. Like, my particular approach typically is to try and, you know, the feeling that the trial process is hard enough without making it harder on my clients. You know, that you don't have to use maximum harm techniques to get what you want in a case. Like, that's my own personal philosophy. I sometimes go outside the bounds of that, but everybody has different tactics, and, you know, lawyers use the tactics that work for them. And so Busby has used these tactics in the past for other clients. It's unusual to use these tactics relating to sexual assault cases because these are very emotional cases, and it's high profile like this. When we're having it in the public discussion, it can be really hurtful to the participants to it, and it can be hurtful to the people listening to how people talk about the participants in this lawsuit. Like, it's just painful. But, you know, it may be that he and his clients have determined that this is the way that they want to go forward with these cases. And it's kind of an interesting case from his perspective because not all the plaintiffs may be similarly situated. And so it's really hard to manage expectations and desires of that many clients all at the same time who may have different interests.
We got 22 of them. So the difficulty there. Can you sit for a minute? Because I got a couple more questions that I need to ask you before.
I have all the time in the world for you guys.
All right. See, I love that. Steph Stradley with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. If you got a question, you can tweet it to us. You're more than welcome to do that. But we got some meat and potatoes that we got to get to with Steph on the other side. Right now, though, I got to talk about Chastain Ford. I want to tell you, the dealer, you've dealt with dealerships, and maybe you haven't had a great experience, or maybe you have had a good experience. I can tell you this, I'm older, bought a lot of cars, and I got to tell you, the experience that I had with Chastain was the best experience I've ever had with a dealership. It's not even arguable. I love the people there. I love what they stand for. I love their philosophy. Their philosophy isn't let's gouge, get as much as I've seen that in dealerships before, that we have to get as much as we possibly can. And, you know, the product be damned and the client be damned. That's not the way they go about it at Chastain Ford. They're the nicest people, the Chastains, and everybody over there. And that's where it starts. It starts the top on down, and everybody acts accordingly, because we're not going to act like that. We're not going to act like the other dealerships. We're not going to gouge. We're not going to add on. We're not going to make sure that we just get as much as we can. We're going to get somebody in that vehicle, and we're going to get them at the best price we possibly can, so it's affordable to them. You're looking for that kind of dealership, ChastainFord.com, or get to them on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown Chastain Ford.
G'day, mates. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston Sabercats. When I'm not playing rugby, I'm listening to John and Lance on the Bench. Go Sabercats.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
7:45 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stephanie Stradley with us here. She writes for the Chronicle. She's a longtime Houstonian, a lawyer, and big. She's always been a big fan of the Texans. Well, I don't want to say that. She's always
been. That's accurate.
Yeah, she was a huge fan of the Texans. I don't know if she still is.
Yeah, she still is.
Well, no, she says she's a little disappointed.
Yeah, you can be disappointed and still be a big fan.
Yeah, I guess. All right, Steph.
Wait. Where I'm at right now is I'm just encouraging them. I want to encourage all of our sports teams to be healthy. That's where I'm at.
Exactly. We wish that. If they suck, then nobody listens to the radio about sports. So, yeah, we absolutely want them to be as good as possible. It's just that Cal.
And I like a lot of the players. Like, if you talk about football, there are aspects of this team that are nice.
Yeah, no. I'm sure there's a lot of good guys that don't have 22 lawsuits against them.
Yeah, they're pretty much everyone else on the roster.
All the other guys.
Yeah.
So, Steph, this is kind of important, what happened yesterday. What with the revelation by Rusty Harden of Shanae Lawson about the text messages that she's been sending, because by far the most egregious accusations and the ones that are most troubling for Deshaun are the forced oral sexual assault. So if you eliminate one of those, and because some of the other ones, Steph, I think everybody's like, oh, it's 22 lawsuits and how horrific and it's sexual assault. Well, some of them are he was gyrating. Some of them he wanted me to touch. Some of them are he wanted me to do different stuff.
I'm not going to engage in this kind of conversation of this is worse than, like, yeah. Is the felony worse? Yeah.
Yes.
But there is a relatively new offense called indecent assault, and that's a Class A misdemeanor. That's pretty serious. And, there is no minor crime if you're accused of them. You know, it's not something that you have to register for as a sex offender.
Well, no, certainly, but
felony.
It's
not something that people want to root for, or at least some people would want to root for.
No, that's not the point. But certainly, felony accusations are much more serious for Deshaun criminally.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, it's hard. Like, the way that all kind of came out is difficult because we're getting part of the picture, and certainly, if it goes all the way to trial, we would get the full picture. But yeah, Rusty gave us part of the picture, and that part of the picture looks a particular way. But like, for me, given everything I've seen and heard, I am just kind of standing on the sides of this and saying, yeah, there's things coming out different ways. Don't sound good. It's gonna be real ugly until it's not. And the posture of the cases currently is not really great for settlement because the lawyers clearly, just from looking on the outside, don't tend to trust each other. It's difficult to even talk because, so and so wants to settle and they want to settle this way and da 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 da. I mean, it's really, like, this would be a hard case even if the lawyers had similar tactics and trusted each other. These cases is much more difficult.
Yeah.
By the nature of it, Tony Busby, has his point of view. He has no downside of going forward. He has no risk other than, just say, hey, this is my case and we win it or we don't win it.
Right.
And he can pick which cases that he wants to go forward with. So, if one case doesn't look as good for him, but other cases do, he might go that way.
We've seen guys playing Antonio Brown with a civil suit hanging over his head. Not 22, but one.
Yeah.
And he was able to play. We've been of the opinion here, and we've seen it plenty, read and all kinds of stuff, that Deshaun is the criminal alleged or possible charges against him. This has to be cleared up before probably Deshaun can be traded, because what team is going to trade for him with criminal charges hanging over his head? How is there any estimate on how long this could possibly, and we know that he's not going to have his deposition for the civil until February. Is there any possibility that during this season we'll know anything about and if he is charged criminally, how long is that going to take?
That's a hard thing, because even one of these kind of cases, you know, the lawyers don't know how long it's going to take to investigate. So even one of these cases could be over a year. Like, you know, they can do investigations quickly, or they can do them over a long time. Like, there's no real, you know, limit on that. And, you know, I guess it's been reported that 10 women, not all of them Busby clients, have gone to the police. But the investigators are not limited as to who they talk to, whether there's formal charges or not. Like, they are going to wherever the facts go. And so, I mean, my view on this is, yeah, will criminal charges put more pressure on the NFL to do something? Yeah, that could happen. They have their own investigatory arm right now that in recent years they've tried to wait until their investigation is done before they make a finding, mostly because they want it. You know, their investigations are mostly to kind of protect themselves from a litigation perspective if the player pushes back. So they want to make sure that their investigations are as thorough as possible, but they don't have subpoena power. And police don't necessarily, you know, cooperate with them. So, like, when people have been floating as a trial balloon, well, you know, he's definitely going to go on the exempt list. Well, how long? Like, there are legal reasons why an indefinite exempt list is hard for the NFL to do. It's not that, you know, the NFL is afraid of, you know, paying lawyers, because they're not. And Roger Goodell certainly has a lot of latitude in what he does. But it's a weird situation because, you know, it opens up a door that they might not want open. Like, do they really want to open the door of saying, hey, we're going to punish people just for shopping the gram, which is what one view of these activities are?
Yeah, that's one view, but also it's what happens after you shop the gram. I mean,
I think it
will obviously further, but I think that this is almost, I don't want to make it akin to this, but I see some similarities potentially with Major League Baseball had their cheating scandal where they knew there was a lot of stuff that was beyond just the Astros. And I think even before they knew the Astros and Red Sox were doing stuff because they knew the Yankees were doing, they knew this was going on in baseball, and they wanted to push everything aside during steroid scandal, wanted to make sure no one brought up steroid stuff because they know behind the scenes. I'm sitting here thinking, it can't be good for Deshaun. It's not good for the league. It's not good for anyone for this to get to trial, because you're going to hear more salacious details without question. That's why I'm so surprised that both sides seem so dug in, and especially Deshaun's side, on not getting something done just to get rid of this.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't care who you are. If somebody picks up your cell phone and starts flipping through it, you might not enjoy that. For whatever reasons.
Especially John.
Especially John. So
I don't even enjoy looking at my cell phone.
So, is it clearly in everyone's best interest for these to go away? Yes. But it's really hard to come to a resolution when the NFL's decision is kind of uncertain. You have these criminal cases out there that are uncertain, and Tony Busby has said it's not about money, but it's definitely a situation where money is the only option that you can really deal with these things. And Rusty Harden's position is, hey, you know, we're willing to talk to people, but we want the terms of the settlement to be open.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is, as I get the sense of it, they don't want, you know, there to be a settlement and then Busby being able to crow about and say, hey, look at all this money. I got all this money, and he's, you know, this, that, and the other thing. You know, I think if I were involved with it, I would think that they would come to some kind of money agreement that would deal with some of the trauma issues that the plaintiffs have indicated, and then come up with a mutually agreed statement from both sides that is amenable to both. Kind of what eventually happened with the Kobe Bryant situation. But, you know, now is a different time than then, you know. We're in a world where people can talk back, and so it's harder to get resolutions that a large number of people are fine with, because, you know, you're pretty it's pretty disturbing to think that, you know, if what is said is true, you know, then he just goes off and, you know, plays football.
Yeah, right. 22, that's hard to maneuver through. Steph Stradley, we appreciate you being here as always. Great talking to you again. And we'll see you out there. And hey, by the way, that we thought they looked better on Saturday night. We were pleasantly surprised that they were a competent football team on Saturday night. Did it surprise you?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, I think there's been a number of things for a number of years that have been weighing the team down. Primarily, they didn't have NFL position coaches, like, you know, and, you know, if you have better position coaching and you have a bunch of veterans who are scared about playing in an NFL game, you know, there are a bunch of solid guys playing well together, and that is a way that you can win some games. And there have been teams in the past that have been that way. It's a harder way to win than focusing more on talent, but, you know, that is a way that you can win some games. And they've been really focusing on special teams a lot.
They definitely looked. I think you're absolutely right. I think the assistant coaches are, and what he's with Lovie Smith as opposed to Anthony Weaver. I think that there is a lot more. I think they look a lot more. They look a lot better. Let's just put it that way.
I think the key thing is going to be, okay, once you get to the regular season where people play well together as a team, you know, but other teams have more talent at the quarterback position, you know, deal with that. They're going to just have to scrap their way through things with the talent that they have.
Yep. Hey, we appreciate you joining us. Head on out there. I know you're going out. You've been out to practice a bunch, and get on out there, and we appreciate you staying here with us.
Anytime.
All right, Steph Stradley right here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Taking a break. When we come back, we've got the score ranked every team's offensive line. And where do you think the Texans are? It might surprise you. It might not. We'll talk about it on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!